Blue Jays, baseball, and more Blue Jays. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack on 365 Sportscast.
This ball is crushed.
The radio show for everything Toronto Blue Jays.
Flyer and another one. My goodness.
And good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Scott Belford here with the walk-off, joined by my good buddy and pal, hello, Adam Mack. This is a Blue Jays-focused podcast here on 365 Sportscast. We run this every single Tuesday at 6 Eastern, and we're kind of the pregame into most of your Tuesday Blue Jays games. Of course, the Blue Jays game tonight at 7 Eastern in Dunedin, Florida. They are at home, or their pseudo-home, against the Yankees. So we will preview the upcoming game tonight, Ryu versus Jameson Taillon. We will go over some odd Jay stats that kind of stand out on the season so far. And of course, we'll get into the happenings around Major League Baseball. I did want to talk hecklers. We're both comedians. And of course, that's one thing that baseball and comedy kind of have in common, is that hecklers come out in droves. And Bryce Harper was being heckled pretty good, and had a small sign of being likable, which is very rare for Bryce Harper.
It's the first time I've ever seen it. I didn't know it was possible.
How's your weekend been, bud? How has the last few days treated
right.
you?
Nothing too spectacular happening on my end, but all the snow is gone, so.
Yeah, it's starting to look like baseball season here in Alberta, right? All right, gang, the Blue Jays sitting currently at 4-6, and it's been a rough start to the season for Jays fans because they've lost a lot of games that could have swung the other way, and those are always a little bit more difficult to deal with when you look at the 4-6 record and you're like, this could be 6-4 with just a few bounces going the other way. And now that we're 10 games into the season, that's 7% done. Things are still very early on, but there is a stat here I wanted to bring up before we start getting into tonight's game and even yesterday's game. So the Blue Jays, obviously, you look at that lineup and you think offensive juggernaut.
Yes,
right?
Sir. We've been saying it all year.
Well,
everybody has 30 home run potential.
Everybody on this team has 30 home run potential, and they are not showing it currently. Okay, so in the first 10 games, the Jays rank 6th in all of baseball in, get this, pitching. Their ERA is 3.06 over 9 innings. And let's face it, if you can't win more games than you lose, limiting your opponent to 3 runs, well, you're just not scoring enough. And that's exactly what's happening, because the Jays are ranked 5th lowest in runs created plus. 5th lowest.
Still early.
I don't know. It's very early, and guys are still kind of finding their swing. This kind of transitions perfectly into us talking about yesterday's game, because that was a prime example. Jays lose to the Yankees 3-1. So now the season series against the Yanks are 2-2. They're going into tonight looking to even the series, this series up, and just take the lead on the whole season series. Robbie Ray, by the way, he was back from injury
Welcome
yesterday.
Welcome sight, wasn't it?
Whew, wasn't it? Did you watch the game, bud?
I caught the first 6 innings.
Okay, so you saw Robbie Ray at work. He looked really good, man. He gave up that long ball to Higo Shioka.
I mean, he's no Tanner Roark, right? But
which we're gonna get to in a second here. So he did give up the one long ball, and he walked a guy. So it was a 2-1 blast, two-run blast, which has been Robbie Ray's Achilles heel all along, right? Is that he lacks control sometimes. He gives up some walks, and he did yesterday too in the 5 innings that he pitched. He gave up 4 walks, but he struck out. I'm going to need to get you to look that up. We'll look that up for a second here, what he struck out. But he was pitching well. He was striking guys out. He was doing what he does.
3 strikeouts yesterday, but I'll double check that.
Yeah, just double check. Gerrit Cole, of course, he was a little bit too much to handle yesterday for the Blue Jays. a little frustrating there. And what do? It's Gerrit Cole. He's one of the best.
Paid like it.
Yeah, he sure is. Okay, so here is what I wanted to get into. And I think the Jays are on the upswing right now. You brought it up, Tanner Roark. Everyone's been kind of panicking about Tanner. He was finally moved into the bullpen, and the Jays had to do that with guys coming back from injury. So Robbie Ray came back yesterday.
By the way, Robbie Ray, three strikeouts.
Yeah, three strikeouts. So he's, you know, four walks,
three
right?
Three
walks, three strikeouts. So, which is what you can expect from Robbie. You're going to get as many walks as strikeouts, but he does have that killer fastball, big lefty. So he's going to get his strikeouts. Tanner Roark was causing panic amongst the Blue Jays fanship. We both saw it firsthand here, Adam, obviously. Sure. And we talked about this many times. There's no way that they were going to DFA Tanner Roark, owing him $12 million. They're not going to just give him $12 million to walk away, despite every Jays fan's fantasies of that happening. They moved him into the bullpen, and this is probably a good place for him. He's a mop-up guy. He's basically Shun Yamaguchi at this point from last year, right? If the Jays are down 7-1 going into the third, guess what? We're going to see Roark out there, and we're going to see him for 5-6 innings because he's going to try and save this bullpen. The Jays are already at a 9-man bullpen. Their pitching is already suspect on the starting end of things, so they are already going to go into the bullpen quite a bit. He might actually be a valuable piece to this team when it comes to saving arms.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Do you like him in the bullpen? Obviously, it's better than him starting.
I think that's exactly where he ends up. Like, I think it's a necessary evil to have one of those guys. It's unfortunate that we're paying a guy like that $12 million. But, yeah, I mean, if you let him go, you're just asking for trouble, right? Like, there's Murphy's Law waiting for you.
Yeah.
As soon as you let him go, that's when you get three more injuries. And you're saying, man, wish we at least had some warm body to put out there. So he's our some warm body.
And it does suck that the Jays are in a situation where we need Tanner Roark. Sort of, we need him to eat innings for us in the most inopportune times. Now, by no means do I want to see Tanner Roark in any high leverage situations, but the Blue Jays are going to lose the odd game. I mean, we're 4-6 right now. I think this is a playoff team. We've talked about this before. Adam has said this is a playoff team. But currently, they need to weather the storm. They've got reinforcements coming back. I know I just read today that Nate Pearson, Ross Atkins came out and kind of gave an injury update. Nate's 100% nice. Right now. He's pain-free. He's pitching off the mound, and basically all they need to do is build him back up. So he's probably a week or two away. He's fairly close to returning to this team. And then do you think they just stick him right into the rotation? I think they do.
I don't know how they wouldn't. I mean, they might put him in with like a significantly reduced pitch count.
To start, right? Like maybe piggyback him off somebody. Maybe piggyback Roark off of him. I don't know. Like, it is going to be interesting to see what they do with Pearson. Right now, the rotation is Hyunjin Ryu, Robbie Ray, Ross Stripling, Steven Matz, and TJ Zoik. Pearson will probably knock Zoik down. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think they're going to keep Zoik stretched out. I think they're going to send Zoik to AAA. He's got options, and that's one of the bummers about having options. And we can get into this further with options, but it does really stink for guys who perform well but have options and wind up getting sent down. Santiago Espinal, we'll talk him in a second here because that just happened to him.
Nate Pearson, can I just so the Blue Jays say have been, one thing with Nate?
Yeah,
you jump might not in,
please.
Like this, but I feel like 2021 is going to be a let's see what we have in this guy year for Nate Pearson. I think, regardless of how the Jays are performing, we kind of need to decide, is he going to be a top-of-the-rotation pitcher for us? Does he have that in him? Right? Like, we haven't seen it yet. Not
out of him starting.
Well, we're all.
He looked pretty darn good against.
We're hyped on the radar gun, but beyond that, yeah. I mean, we don't have a very large sample size of him being a 7-8 inning guy. That's for better or for worse. The same that we're going to see from Bo Bichette at shortstop. I think he's going to just get a infinity long leash. We're going to.
For this year.
And we're going to say, look, you've got the rest of summer to show us what you've got. And it's either you're the guy. I know Nate Pearson's super young, right? But does he have it in him to be a 7-8 inning guy potentially? Or is he a bullpen arm?
And you do make a good point. If you look at his professional career since he was drafted in 2018, he hasn't pitched more than 100 innings. I think it's 102 is his max.
Still very young. Like, I'm not trying to say let's hit the panic button.
And he is.
But he's up in the big leagues now. The clock has started on the service management manipulation baloney.
Yeah.
I think it's just, you know, they don't have to necessarily make a decision, but I think there's going to be some free agency moves that need to be made this offseason, and whether we're investing in starting pitching.
How much Pearson progresses is going to be based on what they need to go up.
That's all I'm
Absolutely.
Saying. So.
And you're right. Pearson has looked his best. Pearson has looked his most dominant out of the bullpen. At the end of the year, when he came back from injury, he looked really, really good. But I mean, this is a guy that you don't want pitching one or two innings. You're hoping that he can put it together, develop that fourth pitch in his arsenal, and be a dominant starter. He's got a fastball that tops out around 101, 102. And experts and scouts say that they think that he can top out around 105. Like, this is a guy that is an extreme talent. So, of course, you'd like him in that starting rotation. But you make a good point. Like, there's no guarantees in baseball, and you don't know what you've got until you run it out there and see. And we haven't had a chance to do that with Pearson.
That's one other thing I'm kind of wondering about too is we've already talked about injury concern with Nate Pearson, and a lot of the injuries that he's encountered haven't been his fault. But at what point, and I'm not saying this is what management is looking at for this season, but at what point, and again, he's still young. I can hear 24. Everybody yelling at me through their headphones. Relax. But at what point does management need to look at Nate Pearson and say, well, we're going to have to press him a little bit. We're going to have to lean on him and really see, is he a guy that we can ask to carry the load? Right? Because, if he's not, you know, we need to figure that out soon. We need to figure it out before we give him any money. And we need to figure it out before we give anybody else any money. I don't mean anybody else on the team. I mean free agency-wise. Right?
Yeah,
but we need to be able to see, like you said, what was his biggest inning count as a
102.
If we can't lean on him for a full season reliably, then we got to look elsewhere.
You need 150 innings out of Nate Pearson. And that's low end. Like, when we look at this rotation in 2022, 2023, if Nate Pearson is our number two, or maybe he surpasses Hyunjin Ryu if all goes right, that's amazing. But you need at least 160 innings out of him. Of course you do.
We're at the point now where this playoff window has started. You know, this last offseason, management made it very clear that, look, we are starting our window of contention. So at this point, like, I'm sorry, but it's too late to just say, well, let's slowly bring Nate along. Like, he's either going to be here or he's not.
If he's healthy, send him out. And I'm with you on that at this point. I mean, I'm not saying 2022. I'm not saying this year you go out and try and get 160 innings out of him. That's not going to happen. I mean, he pitched 20 innings last year, and all of the pitchers' innings in baseball are going to be a little bit less than they normally would be because everybody pitched 60 games instead of 162. It would be asinine
yes.
to put a regular workload for sure. on your top pitchers because you're just going to deal with injuries. However, I am right there with you, man. Come 2022, if Nate Pearson is healthy, let him
because
go.
Because these are this is the last thing I'll say on Nate Pearson, and then I promise we can move on. But this is same with Bo Bichette. This is we need answers to questions this season because this is going to set the tone for when we're actually a World Series contender, right? We can still kind of mess around with it this year, but by 2022, 2023, we need to know that, okay, we're going to have Nate and he's going to be 160 inning guy for us. We need to know, is Bo Bichette actually a shortstop, or are we going to have a tough talk with him and say, you're one of the best second basemen in the league, you know, and that's just, you know, we're not a World Series contender team this year. We are a playoff team this year, but we are on the upward swing and we got a few pretty big question marks that we don't necessarily need answers to, but we need to know that we are either in the right direction or in the wrong direction because otherwise we're going to blow this whole window.
Yeah. No, you're 100% correct, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that the only way to figure out what you got in Nate Pearson is to take the reins off and see what he's got. Okay, buddy, let's get into this last weekend here because holy, what a kerfuffle for the Toronto Blue Jays. Just a really good reminder that we are in the middle of a global pandemic. Just so much lineup shuffling to start this game two of the Angels series. So Teoscar Hernandez was in contact with a positive test. And this is just in, by the way, 20 minutes ago, he is actually positive himself. So he is going to remain on the COVID IL. He is going to miss a minimum of 10 more games or days, I should say. And he wasn't the only one affected. Now, the Jays are in the midst of getting their vaccinations. Ryan Barucki on Saturday got his and felt sick and missed the game. Just simple
reaction to the...
Just one of those reactions. It's not out of the norm at all. In fact, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. between the second and third inning. And it's funny because Adam and I were live streaming the game, which, by the way, we're live streaming tonight's game too. If you'd like to tune in on YouTube, the Walk Off Podcast is what you type into YouTube there. You can subscribe to our channel if the mood should strike you. But Lourdes Gurriel, we're watching him, and all of a sudden he comes off the field between the second and third, kind of disappears into the hallway towards the clubhouse. And I guess he was ralphing his cookies into the garbage can there. And then he got really dizzy and just kind of sat down and no one really noticed him. All of a sudden guys are running out onto the field. And then all of a sudden you see some confusion. Guys start shuffling positions. Joe Panic comes out and takes second base. And, you know, thank goodness Biggio is a dude of all trades. He winds up out in right field. Palacio, who is, you know, in the middle of his MLB debut, Josh Palacio moves to left. It was just chaos. And you're like, oh my God, this is all because of a couple vaccinations. No wonders they staggered the vaccinations throughout this team. Cause I was wondering why they were doing that. It's you don't want everyone throwing up in garbage cans.
It felt like when I was in Little League, and you might recall this feeling, where it was just the third inning of the game and now everybody's got a new position and everyone's just huddled around the coach saying, where am I going? Where am I going? Right. And he's just you're going to third. Yeah. You're going to right field. You're sitting this inning. Okay. Yeah. And you're going to left field. I just felt like that's what we were watching in that Blue Jays game.
It was so confusing because you're just it was so hard as a fan watching it, and we had it on mute. And we're just guys are shuffling all over the place. What the heck is going on? But it turned out Lourdes was sick. But of course, where there is subtraction in a lineup, there is opportunity. And Josh Palacio and Santiago Espinal were the recipients of that opportunity. And both of them had killer games on Saturday night. Josh Palacio, of course, made his debut on Friday, and they lost that game. He was all smiles the whole time. It was just beautiful to watch. And it was really cool because Adam and I have been interviewing prospects in the Jays system for the last three months.
Whoa.
Yeah, we're up to about 12 or 13 guys in the Jays system that we've talked to. And Josh Palacio was a dude that we chatted with literally 2 weeks ago. We talked to him right after camp kind of closed and the regular season was starting. And so we got to talk to Josh and he was disappointed that he didn't make the team, but he said all the right things and he was ready to go. He had a great spring. He was very excited about the chance that might come to him. And lo and behold, 8 games into the season and Josh Palacio was making his major league debut. And it was just so cool, man. It was very cool to see how excited he was, but even more so just the energy that he infused into that lineup in that 9 hole. You know, he got his first major league hit, bunt single to move both runners on first and second ahead. And we've watched guys like Danny Jansen in the 9 hole try and lay down bunts. He can't do it. Like, this is a team that doesn't have a lot of guys on it that can lay down a bunt when you need them to. And to see Palacio do it, and he wasn't done there. My God, he was good for 3 more hits and a walk on top of that. He went 4 for 4 on the night. Jays exploded in that game, 15-1 win over the Angels. And I really do think that Palacio had a big thing to do with it, turning that lineup over, having confidence when he comes to the plate. Guys that are coming up next were like, we're going to bat. We're going to get a chance to try and drive in some runs. Santiago Espinal went 3 for 4 with a walk, you know, and he played a great third base. He looked fantastic defensively. Of course, they got Espinal out of Boston back in 2018 when they traded, at the time, World Series MVP Steve Pierce. But it was a good little prospect they got in return. Some of you might not even remember this. The Jays picked up a lot of Steve Pierce's contract that was remaining that year to get a higher level prospect. They had their eyes on Espinal. Boston didn't wish to give him up. And of course, it worked out in a money type of thing. But watching him come in and play third base so well on that Saturday when the team was slumping, the team was at a 4-game losing streak, and just seeing these young kids come up and infuse a little bit of energy in there and some enthusiasm was really cool. There was one thing that stood out too. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it, but there was a moment there at the beginning of the game where Vladdy Jr. is introducing Espinal to Albert Pujols, and it was awesome. It was like watching a small child be introduced to Santa Claus. It was like, it was
really cool.
It was so cool. But fellow Dominican Republic man, and of course Albert Pujols is everybody's god in Dominican Republic. I mean, he is the king of baseball there, so you could just see the respect oozing out of the Vladdy Jr. and Espinal. It was very cool.
So Palacios goes 4 for 4. Espinal goes 3 for 4. Everybody hits. How did Danny Everybody Jansen hits. Do? 0 for 5.
Danny Jansen did not hit.
0 for 5.
Rowdy Tellez did not hit. And this is where, and it's too bad, Espinal had options. And we were talking about this earlier in the show, right? So Espinal got sent down the next day. He goes 3 for 4 with a walk. He gets sent down the next day because he has options. They can stick him down in the alternate site and they don't need to worry about him going on waivers. They don't need to worry about protecting him. He's the guy that's going to move up and down. And I think we're going to see that quite a bit with this guy. Josh Palacio also has options. However, Palacio's a guy who plays right field. He plays center field. He plays left field. He's got that outfield versatility. He plays all three positions quite well. He's got a good arm. He hits left, which is something that this team lacks. And I think Jonathan Davis and Rowdy Tellez better watch their backs, especially with Teoscar being out extended here. We're going to get a little bit more of a chance to see extended preview of Josh Palacio, and if Palacio continues to hit, I think one of those other guys are going to get a move, and we'll see what happens. Now, I know we brought up that we did get to sit down with Josh Palacio. a couple weeks ago. We do have a great clip here of him talking about his worst slump. So we'll throw to that here.
Hi, guys. This is Joshua Palacios with the Toronto Blue Jays, and you're listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. Hope you enjoy.
Is there a slump that you went through in your professional career to this point that kind of stands out in your mind? What did you learn from it, and how do you approach slumps at this point in your career?
Oh, yeah. I've had two major slumps, but the one that stuck out to me the most was when I was in high A. I was raking, doing everything right. It's like nothing I could do was wrong. And then my girlfriend and my best friend came down to see me. And the day they arrived, it sent me, it's not their fault, but it sent me into a spiral. So something went wrong, and I went into like a 28 at bat, like 80% strikeout. My girl's first time watching me play pro ball in real life. And my boy, and I'm just striking out left and right. I could not hit a ball to save my life. The ball just started disappearing to me. It was an invisible baseball. And I just couldn't do anything right at the time. But one thing I did learn is how I go about what I'm doing. Getting hits is kind of out of my control. Those things, I can't control that. All I can control is what pitch I'm swinging at, what's my mindset when I get in the box, and just trying to square that baseball up. So that slump definitely showed me, like, hey, we're not going to chase some of these results that everybody else chases. We're going to bring it back to what's the process, what can I control, and then give myself the best opportunity to present myself with getting a hit.
Man, do I ever relate to that. It's funny what the brain does, right? You're just something you do all the time, and then all of a sudden you almost want to like validate all the work that you've been putting into something. Like, I always hate when my family is in the audience when I'm performing. Yes. And even though, you know, like they just want to be there to support and stuff, I'm like, oh man, I better be getting laughs. Or they're going to be like, what is this guy doing? Right.
Yeah, man. You start letting all those extra things get in there, and then you end up striking out 80% of the time.
Yeah. Oh, the brain is a funny thing, eh? So you, my man, you're a very experienced pro ball player at this point. You're 5 years in, and I'm sure at times it's been tough. What would you say the most valuable experience or biggest lesson you've kind of taken away from the grind that is being a minor league ball player over the last half decade?
I'd say two things. One, learning how to save your money. That's number one. Minor league grind, you've got to learn how to live off the minimum possible that you can experience. Like, whatever the lowest you can spend is, you got to learn how to live off of that. Yeah. So now I know going forth, I'm going to be able to save my money real well. I've got a lot of tricks now. I know what I'm doing. And the second thing would be going back to what we're talking about, trusting in the process, not looking up, not constantly looking at the scoreboard. When you're looking up, looking at the scoreboard or playing that comparison game, it could almost feel like, hey, man, I don't have a shot. I may never make it. Look at all these things that have to go right. And when you put your head down, you focus and you pay attention and grind on what you can control. When you look up, or every time some things may come up and you glance, you realize like, whoa, I'm moving a lot farther than I thought I'd ever be moving, or farther than I thought I was at the moment. So one of the best things you can do is just put your head down and grind.
I know it's always talked about the finances in minor league baseball. When you first started in low A, was it a little eye-opening to you, even though you'd heard all about it?
When you first experience it, it opens your eyes. It does. It does. My uncle and my dad both play pro ball. They told me about the minor league grind and the bus rides and everything. And I'm like, yeah. And after a while, your dad, your uncle just telling you stories. But as time grew on, it's like, wow, I'm really in this thing. And you start looking at that bank account, and it's not going up very much, and it's going down really quickly. It's like, oh man, we're going to have to change a few things about how we're living now.
It must be pretty cool to kind of go through all that and now get to the point where I'm sure you spent that time in big league spring training this year and you're like, hey, we're pretty well looked after here.
Oh yeah, it's always nice when the numbers go up. When those numbers go up, everything's a little more comfortable. You relax a little more, eat a little better.
So, my man, have you always been, have you always hit left-handed, or is that something that maybe like your dad or your uncle as you were younger were like, you should try swinging left?
No, it's actually the opposite. Everybody tried to get me to hit righty, and I was just a natural lefty. Made no sense to most of them. The only theory they've got is my great uncle threw lefty and hit righty. So maybe there's something in there. But I was a switch hitter when I was growing up because everybody thought, like, hey, you're supposed to be able to hit right, so hit right. Yeah. And then after a while, I gave it up and decided, you know what, if I get hit lefty on lefty, I might as well just stay here. It's a little easier.
Well, it's funny what a big deal baseball does make of that lefty-righty splits. Yeah. Do you prefer hitting a right-handed pitcher?
Honestly, I have no preference, and at some points, I won't lie, I'd rather hit a lefty. It's almost like you have to do more things right to hit the lefty, so you give yourself less room for error, and you've kind of locking in a little more.
When's the last time you hit? When's the last time you hit from the other side of the plate?
Oh, we're talking senior year in high school. I was hitting, switch hitting. Quick story: twisted my ankle, couldn't hit righty, so I decided just to hit lefty. And then I realized, like, wow, all right, it's a lot easier to just stay on this left side against both these guys. So I just stuck it out.
Just to concentrate on the one thing, eh?
It made things a lot easier.
Do you ever think about it when you're slumping? You go, man, maybe I'll just try from the other side.
Oh, now you think about everything. I've been thinking about standing there with the middle. The guy's hitting in the middle. I've definitely seen some lefties where I've been like, yeah, I should be hitting at the right side right now. It'd be a lot easier to hit off the right side. There's every once in a while you got the guy throwing 100 like that lefty right. For the Phillies. Where you're like, yeah, I'd rather be hitting on the right side of the plate. Right
yeah. Now. How satisfying, I've always wondered this, when you go up to the plate and mm-hmm. the opposing manager pulls the pitcher and brings in a lefty to face you, how satisfying is it when you just get a hit anyways?
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing when they go get the lefty because it's like, hey, at some points I'm like, thank you, you just did me a favor. I'd rather hit over this guy. So when you get that hit and you break all the baseball stereotypes and everything, the manager's pissed. It's a great feeling because you did everything you could to try to get me out. You thought about it, but you still couldn't do it.
It's funny how regimented baseball is with that, eh? It's like mm-hmm. if there's a stereotype in baseball, we stick to it. Even if the numbers don't necessarily look that way, we're doing it.
That is facts. Now you could be hitting 400 against a lefty and then, all right, bring in the lefty specialist.
Yeah. And that was the newest member of the Toronto Blue Jays, Josh Palacio, who made his MLB debut on Friday. He went 4-for-4 with a walk on Saturday in his second major league game. And he is actually starting for the Toronto Blue Jays in right field today. While we're at it, let's get into today's preview here. I have the opening day lineup or tonight's lineup. So, batting first at second base is Marcus Semien. Bo Bichette at shortstop, batting second. Vladdy Guerrero staying in that three hole. And Vladdy has been hot. Holy cow. He has already got a wins above replacement that in the first 10 games of this season is equivalent to what he had in his other 189 games played. So, the man is having a heck of a 2021. In the four hole, batting cleanup is Randall Grichuk. He's been great. He's in center field. Kevin Biggio is batting fifth at third base. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., left field. He's batting sixth. Rowdy Tellez at DH in the seven hole. Danny Jansen at catcher. And our boy Josh Palacio, right field and batting ninth. And, of course, Hyunjin Ryu is pitching tonight against Jameson Taillon. The Jays need this one. Ace on the mound. Already lost yesterday to Gerrit Cole. So it would be nice to even up the series here. Go to 5-6 on the year. Be back up on the Yankees in the season series 3-2. And I know we talked a little bit about how the bats have gone cold. But there is reason for optimism. We did just mention Vladdy and how well he's been doing this year. Randall Grichuk has been hot, and he's a streaky guy, and we've talked about this before. Fingers crossed, Randall has found it, right? He made some adjustments in the offseason to his swing. They seem to be working for him, but we've seen Randall get very hot before and then get very cold. So time will tell on that. I did want to talk, and you brought it up earlier, Adam. Bo Bichette, is he going to stick at shortstop? Very early in the season, he has had some defensive struggles, and he's had some offensive struggles. Like you mentioned, I think the Jays are going to give him all sorts of rope when it comes to shortstop. I think it's why they signed Marcus Semien for so much money and moved him to second base, is to kind of see what they had there. But his bat is a beauty. And he's starting to get hot again. He's starting to look good at the plate. And I don't know if you knew this or not, Bo Bichette actually ranks second in all of MLB versus fastballs since 2019. He's hitting 376, which is incredible. Yeah. Especially considering fastballs tends to be what gets this team out. Kevin Biggio can't hit a high fastball of his life depending on it. So Biggio's looking good. And lastly, I did want to talk about Rowdy Tellez. Okay,
we have to.
He has not looked good, my man.
What's the problem?
He's one of the only lefty bats. He's one of the only lefty bats in this lineup. He's the only lefty bat with power. Both Josh Palacio and Joe Panik, they're good. They're good contact hitters. They're not going to hit a ton of home runs. The nice thing with a lefty bat with power is it kind of breaks up all these right-handed hitters in this Jays lineup. So Rowdy, I think, is going to be, and I don't know how you feel about this, man. I think he's going to be given a little bit more leeway than maybe the fans want to see him. I know that that is why he's being run out there again tonight, is they'd like to break up all these right-handers against this lefty, or I should say against this Yankee rotation. So he's swinging at things, and this is all stuff that I wrote before yesterday. Okay, I wrote all this stuff down about Rowdy before yesterday. He just looks bad.
And that is the end of my notes.
He has lost all his confidence. He's swinging at things that are 6 inches off the plate, and he's not recognizing they're off the plate until they're too long. He is visibly pressing, and it might be time for a trip to the alternate site. It might even be time for a stint in AAA. Again, all things I wrote before yesterday, and then there was a little sign of light. He actually looked pretty decent at the plate yesterday. He had a much better eye for what was a strike and what wasn't a strike. He finally got his first hit. He went 0 for 21. And then he hit a single yesterday, and he hit it. I think his exit velo was 108 miles an hour. So he hit it hard. Now, a single's a single. But, buddy, I don't know if you saw the game or you saw the highlight of him after he got that hit. He's... In between innings, he's going to the batting cages, and he's walking through the bullpen, and the guys are celebrating, and he put his arms up, and he was just like, yes! Like, it was just, you could just tell how much pressure he was putting on himself, right? And I know we just listened to Josh Palacio talk about slumps and how it is just a major part of baseball. And you know what? One of the hardest times to slump is at the beginning of the season, because that number up on the Jumbotron when he comes to bat 0 for 21, like that gets in a guy's head, you know? Like, it's one thing to go 0 for 21 in August and you watch your batting average go from 280 to 265, right? And you're like, oh, bummer. But it's not quite as daunting as seeing zero, zero. Every time you're up, you're like zero. You're like, I got to get a hit, especially with this rotation, right? Like, you're looking at this batting lineup and everybody is fighting for at bats. Randall Grishuk, everyone was talking, might have trouble finding places in this lineup to get his swings in. I mean, he's been hot as hot all get out, so which has decreased Rowdy's time. And I think that's one thing that Charlie kind of saw, right? And I don't know. We've talked about Charlie a little bit so far, and he's made some weird decisions. But this is one thing I do kind of like, because Rowdy played very, very well for this team last year. He kind of showed last year that he could show a little discipline at the plate. He doesn't necessarily need to swing at everything, which was his big knock in 2019, because Rowdy has shown power since the moment he stepped into this clubhouse. Since the time he got his big league debut, Rowdy Tellez has shown he has power. But he strikes out a lot, and this is a team that already strikes out a ton. So just that redundancy is not something they need. And it was exciting to watch him kind of find his feet last year. And I kind of like that Charlie is giving him a little bit more leeway than maybe some of the other guys would get. I don't know where you're at on Rowdy, man. Do you think do you think the slight bit of improvement we saw yesterday is worth letting him struggle out of this slump? How much leeway does he get?
He gets, again, I don't think the fans are going to like this answer, but I think he gets all the leeway. I think being a left-handed bat is a big factor. I think the fact that he's shown it. This isn't speculation on, well, he was good in the minors and hopefully he could figure it out at the major league level. Like, it's, he's been there, he's done that, he's performed and produced for us. Right? He's not Danny Jansen. This is a slump. It's all it is. And like you said, when you're 0 for 21 at the start of the season, it looks a lot worse than when you're 0 for 21 in August. And it happens to everyone. Mm-hmm. It happens to everyone all season long. Guess what? At some point this year, there's going to be 20 at-bats where Vlad Guerrero only gets two or three hits. It's going to happen. And that's why guys have to stay in the minors so long before they come up to the major league level. Or at least that's the excuse that management always uses. You know, they need to have X amount of pro at-bats, 800 pro at-bats or whatever, so that they can experience a slump and be able to pull themselves out of it and everything like this. Like, it's not a concern to me, the same way Bo Bichette having a slow spring training wasn't a concern to me, right?
So in 4 years, Rowdy Tellez has played only 177 games.
Can we just stop at that for a minute? A full season is 162.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone on this team who's been with the Jays for four seasons, again, look at Danny Jansen, has been with the team since 2018. He's at like 180 games. Like, even our four-year vets have basically one full season.
Barely one full season under them. And we keep bringing this up about Bo Bichette, but he's not even at 90 games yet. Right? So in 177 games, just over, you know, 15 games over a full season, he has 33 home runs. He has 140 hits. He has 41 doubles, right? So this is a guy that has power. This is a guy who is showing he can hit. So I am not thrilled that we need to sit through Rowdy Tellez in slump mode. That said, Rowdy Tellez hitting makes this team so much deeper and so much deadlier. And that big lefty bat really helps to break up the righties, and it does make a difference. And I think giving Rowdy a chance to work himself out of it is something that we're going to need to sit through. And I think it's important that they give him that opportunity. I mean, I love that they brought Josh Palacio up. Big fan. I mean, we sat and chatted with him for 40 minutes, and he's a fun guy, and he's good to hang around, great energy. He doesn't have the power Rowdy does. He is a lefty bat, which is something that this team needs. And again, we brought this up. He laid down a bunt, which is also something this team doesn't do very well. But in the long run, Rowdy Tellez makes this team much more potent than Palacio, than Joe Panic, than the other options off the bench.
I just want to touch on one thing about Josh Palacios. It's that ability to bunt that I think, especially now that the MLB has permanently adopted the extra innings rule, starting every extra inning with a runner on second. I think at this point, there's too many games where the ability to bunt is actually going to be a factor for us to ignore it. You know? Up until...
I agree. And I mean, that bunt he laid down was textbook. It was beautiful. And right up the third baseline. It was hit hard enough to get past the pitcher. The third baseman had to make a perfect play. And even when he did, Josh was fast enough to get to the bag in time. So, that's a skill that cannot be overlooked. And I think this is something that... all of these things you just brought up that we've just been talking about with Palacio is a reason why Jonathan Davis better be looking over his shoulder. Especially after we've seen a few mental, what's the best way of putting this? Farts, I guess. Brain farts on Jonathan Davis's part, you know, getting picked off in an incredibly inopportune time.
He's been caught stealing third.
Caught stealing a couple times. He's made some blunders on the base path that a guy who's known for his speed and known for his base running shouldn't be making. And he's 30. Like, that's the thing we keep bringing up with Jonathan Davis. This isn't some young, hot prospect. This is a guy who has grinded it out in the minors his whole career. Absolutely. And I respect that to no end. But he probably would already be on a major league team if he was a guy who could play consistently Absolutely. In the major leagues. And we're starting to see that. And I love Jonathan Davis. I think he's great. I love his energy. He's great in the clubhouse. Everyone seems to get along with him. He is incredibly mm-hmm. good defensively.
I don't know. I think...
Is Palacio the better option?
Oscar, like he might said, be. Out with COVID for the next 10 days. So we are for sure going to get to see at least 9 more games out of Palacios. I mean, I don't think mm-hmm. he needs to hit 4-for-4 in those 10 games. But, I mean, if he can have a competent bat, if he can bat, you know, 270, you know, 260 yeah. in that range... If he has the ability to bunt while he does it, I don't know how Jonathan Davis keeps his spot.
Keeps his job. So. Agreed. Agreed. So it'll be interesting to see. And this is, again, it's a real bummer that we had to go through this COVID dance with this team, this the COVID shuffle.
Yeah.
You know, seeing all these guys on the COVID IL, Teoscar actually testing positive, which is a real bummer. And hopefully he's all right and gets over it. And hopefully there's no lingering effects. Absolutely. All of this stuff is obviously coming into play. But it does open up a huge opportunity for Josh Palacio to kind of see what he can do. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I did want to get into strikeouts because this is one thing that has really affected the Blue Jays fan base. Probably more than the Blue Jays themselves, and I will explain that in a second. The Blue Jays did set a record after Game 7 and again after Game 8 for the most strikeouts ever in Blue Jays history to start a season. That's not something you like to see, okay? That said, this is a league in 2021 that is all about the long ball or strikeouts. The Blue Jays... Even after breaking their own franchise record for the most strikeouts of any team a Blue Jays organization has fielded, aren't even in the top 10 in Major League Baseball for That's strikeouts. So now, obviously, there is the other side of the argument of like, just because one team does something bad doesn't mean it's okay that you do something bad, right? And that it's a good point. And this team does need to work on lowering their strikeouts and selecting their pitches a little better. Go up with a plan. I don't mind watching a guy strike out if he's sitting on a fastball and gets fooled on a changeup. What does drive me nuts is watching a guy like Rowdy Tellez flail at a ball 6 inches off the plate.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that, you know, again, not to... Pat Vlad on the back too hard. I don't want to hurt him, but that's been a huge improvement that we've seen from Vlad is that he has the understanding of the strike zone that we were all excited about through his entire skyrocket through the minor leagues.
100%. All this talk about pitch recognition when we were all so hyped on Vladdy coming through the minors and all of a sudden we're seeing it firsthand. And he's hot. So again, and you mentioned this, we wouldn't be baseball fans if we actually expected him to continue this, right? Like you obviously have never watched Major League Baseball if you think Randall Grichuk and Vladdy Guerrero are going to stay this
No,
hot.
Grichuk is streaky though. Vlad has made adjustments in his lifestyle.
Yes.
And
yes.
Up until last year, has given us basically 5 years of reason to be positive, reason to be excited. Like,
yeah.
We're talking literally number one prospect in the major leagues. Not number one Blue Jays prospect, number one prospect in the major leagues. There's been reason to be excited. Like, he did it at the minor league levels. I think that, like, one of my predictions for this year was that Bo Bichette hit 300. I think Vladdy's going to hit 300. I don't think he's going to hit 379 all mm-hmm. season long, but I think
no. But I think you're right. I think Vladdy very well could be a guy who hits between 3 and 320, who we are going to see continue to hit.
He's the opposite of Danny Jansen.
The authority that he's done. I mean,
Danny Jansen is streaky, but he fluctuates between below average and awful. And Vladdy, when he's streaky, is between above average and amazing. So even when he's at his lowest this year, he's still going to be hitting 275. So.
Yes. All right. Enough with the Blue Jays, I guess, for now. We are live streaming in about 12 minutes here. And you can join us on our YouTube channel for that. That's the Walk Off Podcast. The link will be very easy to find for you. And while you're at it, that's where all of our interviews are. So Adam and I are new to 365 Sportscast. This is our second show that we've done. And again, we're going to be doing shows every single Tuesday at 6 Eastern. But what we've been doing prior to that is we've been running a podcast and we've been interviewing former Jays, current Jays even. We talked to Tim Mazza the other day. I know we aired some stuff from him last show. And we've interviewed a ton of future Blue Jays, guys that are prospects, guys that are in the system.
Guys that have a real shot at making the majors this year.
Making a real shot, you know, guys like Adam Klofenstein and Joey Murray and Jordan Groshans. And again, I would have put Josh Palacio in that list 1 week ago. And look, he's in the majors. So again, all of those full interviews and shorter clips are on our YouTube page, The Walk Off Podcast. And feel free to subscribe so you don't miss an interview. All right, buddy. I did want to talk about Joe Musgrove throwing the first no-no for the Padres in history and the first no-no of the year. And had he not plunked Joey Gallo, that would have been a perfect game. Literally, he was just one pitch off of a perfect game. It's incredible. Like, it was just the excitement amongst the fans around baseball was infectious. Like, it wasn't just Padres fans. I was on Twitter and I was like, this is unbelievable. Like, I was following along on game day on MLB. Like, it was just a very exciting thing to watch. And then to watch the highlights of how excited the Padres fans were and how excited his teammates were. And you know what? Joe Musgrove is a great pitcher. Okay. But when you look at that Padres starting rotation, he is not the guy that you choose as, there's the guy who's going to get the first no-hitter in Padres history, Joe Musgrove. Of course it is. So very cool. Big congrats to Joe Musgrove. Big congrats to all the Padre fans out there.
They needed something to be excited about.
So excited.
First week of the season there, Fernando Tatis Jr. went down for the season. So they went from oh no to no no. Nailed it. Oh,
great,
I've been writing
great wordplay. That's why Adam's here.
Working it out.
All right. And for those of you who are new to the show and don't know Adam and I, we're both stand-up comedians. One of the reasons that we started this podcast was just all of our work was gone and we were just very bored and needed something to take our mind off of it. So we started doing this in end of June last year before the start of the 2020 season. And one thing that we have brought up a few times that there is kind of a similarity between baseball and comedy, and that is hecklers. And for whatever reason, hecklers tend to be very prevalent in baseball and in the comedy world. And obviously there's hecklers in other sports, but nobody gets it quite as bad as ball players because it's just such a slow game. You know, like the action comes in bursts. So there's lots of time and quiet time for guys to yell things out. And man, did I get a kick out of... So this was 3-4 days ago. The Braves were playing the Phillies. And it was in Philadelphia. It was in Atlanta. And one of the guys is yelling at Bryce Harper. He's right behind the dugout. And he's yelling at him, "You suck, Harper! You'll never be as good as Acuna! You'll never be as good as Acuna!" And like literally, this guy is going on like this for 30 seconds. And then Harper just looks at Real Muto and looks back at the guy and he goes, "It's Acuna! Acuna! say it right. And Rayo Muto just burst out laughing, right? Like, you could hear laughing in the audience from the people. Like, it was just such a great way to be like, in Atlanta being heckled by a Braves fan and turn to him and be like, you're saying your franchise player's name wrong.
No, it was perfect. It was handled perfectly. Absolutely.
It was so great because you don't like Harper. I mean, when I say you, I mean the proverbial you. There's not a lot of Bryce Harper fans out there. Excuse me if you're a Phillies fan. Obviously, you're a huge Bryce Harper fan if you're a Phillies fan. And we talked about Bryce Harper's
almost every
face.
Day.
But it was pretty endearing. Like, I was like, you know what? I kind of like Harper for this 30 seconds right now. Just a well-placed burn.
Absolutely. I hope it never happens again.
All right. We're going to wrap things up here. We're going to wrap things up with just the news that the All-Star game is being moved to Denver. It's going to Colorado. And I'm not going to really get into the ins and outs of this. This has kind of really divided the MLB fan base, even baseball becoming partisan in these days. And why not? We feel the need to divide and draw lines in the sand over every other little thing. So why wouldn't we do that in baseball? And it's kind of weird too, because I do want to say, like, as a Canadian looking in, it is a little bit confusing, right? And it's confusing because there's so much rhetoric on both sides that genuinely seems valid. It's not black and white. This is not a black and white issue, much like most things in life, right? There's shades of everything. So the game was moved because of new voter laws in Georgia. And these rules have been said to have made it more difficult for certain black communities to vote, right? So voter suppression is something that Major League Baseball was concerned about. And these are communities that are a little bit more remote in Georgia, right? And you need a valid government ID to vote. And a lot of these community members have IDs to their residents and the community housing that they have. However, they don't have official government ID. And to get government ID, it's located hours away. And if you don't have a vehicle and you don't have a driver's license, it becomes very difficult, right? And then, of course, the other side says, well, you need valid ID for all sorts of things, right? Including voting in Colorado, which, you know, is a point. And then they say moving it to Colorado where it's 15% black people compared to Atlanta where it's 56% is kind of the opposite of standing up for black communities, which is also a point. Like, I see both sides. I totally do understand this. And this change of venues is going to cost the city and the businesses of Atlanta millions and millions of dollars. Very sticky situation. I even honestly considered not even bringing this up because I didn't really want to politicize the show because everyone's divided on this issue. But I am going to say one thing about this, and it's baseball related, okay? Not... if you're all waiting on my hot political take, so sad for you, okay? Why Denver? Like, why Colorado? You're going to reward a franchise that just paid St. Louis $50 million to take its best player. This is what we're going to reward them for. This is what's killing baseball, is teams' ability to justify not trying to win. I honestly, like, that Arenado trade, it's honestly, in my opinion, one of the worst trades in baseball. I don't even care if the prospects that they get actually work out for this team. It tore the heart out of this fan base. And this is what Major League Baseball is going to do. Send it to Denver. Reward the Rockies. You know, like, and there's so many teams. Look at the Kansas City Royals. They're actually trying to win. Send it to Kansas City. I don't know, man. I don't know how you feel about this, but for me, I think I'm not going to comment on the decision to move it out of Atlanta, but moving it to Denver, not for
it. Good news is we're out of time. We'll catch you next Tuesday.
Thanks for listening, everyone.